Turn with me to the 11th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. That gospel that tells of the King of Israel and links his life and ministry to the prophecies of the Old Testament. In the first two chapters, we saw the advent of the King. In chapter 3, the presentation of the King by John the Baptist. In chapters 4 through 7, we saw the constitution of the kingdom, that is, the Sermon on the Mount. And in chapters 8 and 9, the nature of the kingdom, how Jesus of Nazareth was anointed of God and went about doing good. And in chapters 10 to 12, we have the proclamation of the kingdom. In chapter 10, we saw how Jesus appointed 12 of his disciples to be his special emissaries called apostles, and he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of heaven has drawn near, or the kingdom of heaven is at hand. The King himself is here. They were like heralds going throughout Israel to proclaim his coming. And then Jesus tells them of the reception that they can expect to receive. And it would not be a positive one. Yes, there would be crowds of people about him. Common people heard him gladly. And for a time he was quite popular. But the more popular he became, the stronger opposition to him became. And he warned his disciples to expect increasing persecution until the Holocaust of Jerusalem, and even beyond that, to the end of the age, it would again be the same. But then we read in chapter 11 how he pronounced judgment on the cities, especially where he did his most mighty works, that had rejected him. Then in verse 25 of chapter 11, we read, at that time when he was becoming increasingly rejected. At that time, Jesus answered and said, this is a very Jewish writing, this Gospel of Matthew. Jewish expressions all the way through it. This is one of them. And at that time, Jesus answered and said, but no one had asked him a question. It's a peculiar Hebrew expression, and if you're using one of the more modern translations, you'll read that Jesus, at that time, Jesus declared. And that is the force of this Jewish idiom here. At that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and the prudent, and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in thy sight. He was being opposed by the high and mighty. He was being opposed by the intelligentsia. Is it any different today? If you've been out and around in the world very much, you know it isn't. So this has been a principle that has always been in effect. God reveals himself to those who are lowly in spirit and have an open heart, but he conceals himself from the wise and the prudent, and reveals himself unto those who are simple, like babes. The Apostle Paul said something very similar in the first chapter of 1 Corinthians. In beginning with verse 25, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world, confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things that are mighty. I've been especially impressed with this. And in verse 28 also, and base things of the world and things that are despised hath God chosen, and things that are not to bring to naught things that are. I've been especially impressed because I've been reading a book on church history. And the part that I've been reading is the history of the church in the Middle Ages. There have always been evangelical Christians in Europe from the time of the apostles. And they were dreadfully persecuted. They were known by many different names. They were known by as Paulists. They were known as Waldenses. They were known as Vaudois. They were known as Albigenses. They were known by many, many different names. But the persecution only scattered them throughout Europe. And some of their descendants became the Moravian Brethren and the various other small groups that helped to spread the Reformation. They were poor. They were, Lyon, France, was one of their centers, and they were called there the poor of Lyon. They were not beggars. They were not riffraff. They were craftsmen. They were people who worked hard for their living. And even by the Romish church that persecuted them and butchered them with an army, a defenseless populace, and extirpated them from many different cities. Even the Romans, Catholics, had said that they lived exemplary lives. And their heresy was they based their faith on the Bible. Those are our cloud of witnesses. In Hebrews 11, we see that the people in the New Testament times had a cloud of witnesses to their encouragement. They're listed in Hebrews 11. All of these kinds of people throughout this church age are our cloud of witnesses. And they were what those people classified the intelligentsia and the princes of Europe at that time classed as riffraff, because their heresy was they believed the Holy Scriptures. So that is a principle that Jesus announced here when he said, at that time Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and has revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed in thy sight. This was a prayer of Jesus at this time, and he goes on then to declare unto those present, all things are delivered unto me of my Father, and no man knoweth the Son but the Father, neither knoweth any man the Father save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal him. The gospel has to be revealed to a heart before the heart can accept it. And the heart has to be not high and mighty, not of the mind of the world. Such a heart will not accept him, as this chapter that we are reading has so graphically shown. And then he gives his universal and tender invitation. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. So all to whom the Son reveals the Father have this invitation to come unto him, whether they are weary and heavy laden by the burden of the law, or by the crushing load of sin, or whatever. The invitation is exclusive in that it is only to those who will respond to the call, and it is as inclusive as every class of people on earth. And then we come to chapter 12 in this proclamation of the kingdom, where we see the mounting resistance against his claims, his claim both to be the King of Israel and to be the Son of God. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn field, and his disciples were hungry and began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat. But the Pharisees saw it. They said unto him, Behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath day. Now the Pharisees were among the learned of that day. They were among the intelligentsia. They were the religious leaders. But they were, as a class, opposed to him on principle. Now, not every Pharisee was a hypocrite. The Apostle Paul, when he was persecuting the church, was no hypocrite. He did exactly what he was claimed to be. But Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea were not hypocrites. They were secret believers until the cross. So there were many Pharisees who were true and honest and became followers, just as there were many of the priests who did. But these Pharisees were the ones who controlled the synagogues. They controlled the society. They were the ones who determined how things would go in Israel. I've also been reading about the account of a very remarkable person that brings out the truth of Jesus' statement here in his prayer and of the opposition that would follow him. In the 1980s, there was a German theologian, a professor named Etta Linnemann. She was a disciple of Hans Fuchs and of Rudolf Bultmann and their associates, who proclaimed the historical critical approach to the Bible, which essentially denied everything supernatural. This woman held three professorships in three different German universities. She had written several dozen books that were standard curriculum in German universities, teaching doubt of the scriptures and of anything supernatural. And she said she felt sincere in what she was doing, that it was truth. And she was honored by all of the theologians and the intelligentsia and the media in Germany. She was greatly honored. But she said that she became depressed. What she was doing seemed not to be accomplishing what she thought it should. And she developed into alcoholism and a downward spiral. And at that time, she met some evangelical Christians in Europe who introduced her to the simple congregation of believers where the Word of God was proclaimed. And she said, suddenly, everything that she had done in her life was worthless. She threw away all of her writings into the trash. She demanded that the German universities and libraries remove her works from their shelves, but they refused to do so and continue to use them. And she said that she found among these simple people, artisans, craftsmen, honest, working German people, the simplicity of the gospel. And then she became one of their missionary educators in Batu, Indonesia. Thank God that Paul didn't say not any wise and noble are called, but he did say not many. And that's what Jesus found here. These Pharisees became his most bitter opponents, because everything he said and did contradicted everything they said and did. And that is not the way to win friends and influence people. But Jesus wasn't trying to win friends and influence people. He was trying to reach those who would receive his message. And he succeeded in that. Now in this chapter, Matthew presents a number of incidents that would read like they followed successively upon one another, but we can see from the other Gospels that he selected various incidents throughout Jesus' Galilean ministry to give a picture of the opposition that the proclamation of the kingdom of heaven was receiving. So when we encounter opposition to the gospel of Jesus Christ, we can see this is the way it has always been. This is the way it will always be until he comes and sets things right. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were hungered and began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day. And what they did was very proper and very legal, and specifically appointed in the law of Moses. So let us turn to 28:9 first. The 28th chapter of the book of Numbers. No, that is not the right one either. Where Jesus was referring to, I've written down the wrong verse here, but Moses was saying that when the person walked through a grain field, he could eat of the grains of corn to satisfy his hunger, and the owner of the field had no objection to that, but he could not take any with him. And that's what the disciples were doing here. And it's in Deuteronomy 23:25. Let's turn there and read that. When thou comest into standing corn of thy neighbor, then thou mayest pluck the ears with thy hand, but thou shalt not move a sickle into thy neighbor's standing corn. So that's all that they were doing. But you notice the Pharisees did not criticize Jesus for the act. That was specifically allowed by Moses. What they objected to is he did it on the Sabbath day. And as we read through this chapter, note this. Jesus deliberately did this on the Sabbath day to make the point that they were in error on their interpretation of the Sabbath. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, Behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath day. But he said unto them, Have ye not read what David did when he was an hungered, and they were with him, how he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them that were with him, but only for the priests? He is referring here to the showbread that the priests were to bake repeatedly and place before the presence of the Lord, first in the tabernacle and then later in the temple. And so that, now we'll turn to 1 Samuel 21:6. Let's read from the first to get the thought of the event. Then came David to Nob, which was a city of the priest, to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David, because King Saul was pursuing him, and said unto him, Why are you here alone, and no man with thee? And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, The king hath commanded me a business. He is kind of stretching the truth a bit. And hath said unto me, Let no man know anything of the business wherewith I send thee, what I have commanded thee, and I have appointed thy servants to such and such a place. Now therefore, what is under thine hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in my hand, so that there of what or what there is present. And the priest answered David and said, There is no common bread under my hand, but there is hallowed bread, that is the showbread. If the young men have kept themselves at least from women, and David answered the priest and said unto him, Of a truth, women have been kept from us about these 3 days, and I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in a manner common, because they had been removed from the table to be replaced, yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel. So the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there that was but the showbread, that was taken from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. This was when David and his followers were very hungry, and Jesus was saying here, but he said unto them, Have ye not read what David did when he was hungry, and they that were with him, how that he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests? What he is saying here is that people are more important than ritual. And these circumstances justified the violation of the ritual for the purpose of the time. And Jesus is going to drive this home further later in this chapter. Or have ye not read in the law how that on the Sabbath days the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? For that, let us turn to the 28th chapter of Numbers. For Jesus is referring to specific passages in the Old Testament in that they he knew that they were familiar with. In Numbers 28, we read the offering of the daily sacrifice. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, and say unto them, My offering and my bread for my sacrifice is made by fire, for a sweet savor unto me shall ye observe to offer unto me in their due season. And thou shalt say unto them, This is the offering made by fire, which ye shall offer unto the Lord, two lambs of the first year without spot, day by day, for a continual burnt offering. One lamb shalt thou offer in the morning, and the other shalt thou offer at even, or a tenth part of an ephah of flour for a meal offering, mingled with the fourth part of an hin of beaten oil. It is a continual burnt offering, which was ordained in Mount Sinai for a sweet savor, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Lord. And the drink offering thereof shall be a fourth part of an hin for one lamb. In the holy place shalt thou cause the strong wine to be poured unto the Lord for a drink offering. And the other lamb shalt thou offer at even, as a meal offering of the morning, and the drink offering thereof thou shalt offer it, and a sacrifice made by fire for a sweet savor unto the Lord. Every day they had to offer these two lambs as a daily sacrifice. One was at about 9 o'clock in the morning, and the other at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. This was what is referred to in the book of Acts, where Peter and John went up into the temple to worship at the hour of prayer. That is the time of the offering of that evening sacrifice that Moses is telling here. Every day. And on the Sabbath day, two lambs of the first year without spot, and two tenth deals of flour for a meal offering, mingled with oil, and the drink offering thereof. This is the burnt offering every Sabbath, besides the continual burnt offering of his drink offering. So on the Sabbath day, they had to double the offering. Now, what that meant was those priests had to be butchers. And they would butcher the lambs on the spot. And they would clean the entrails to offer on the altar by fire. And they would prepare all of this on the Sabbath day. How would you like to butcher four lambs every Sunday? That's what the priest did every Saturday. Now that is hard work. And that was the point of Jesus when he said here, Or have ye not read in the law how that on the Sabbath days the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? In other words, God did not make the Sabbath or any of these rituals absolute. They were given for a purpose, to teach certain definite lessons concerning himself and themselves to the people. But the Pharisees here were emphasizing the ritual as absolute in every sense. But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple, and that was he himself. But if ye had known what this means, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. And that is a quotation from the 6th chapter of the book of the prophet Hosea. In Hosea 6 and verse 6. In the fourth verse of the 6th chapter of Hosea, O Ephraim, what shall I do unto thee? O Judah, what shall I do unto thee? For your goodness is as the morning cloud, and as the early dew it goeth away. Therefore have I hewed unto them by the prophets. I have slain them by the words of my mouth. And thy judgments are as light that goeth forth. For I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. So that the ritual was only for the purpose of pointing them to the truth that God wanted them to learn. But here they were putting all of the emphasis on the ritual, that it was absolute, and that it was, Jesus had been violating it. Jesus deliberately did these things on the Sabbath to make this point. He says, you would not have condemned the guiltless. And here is his statement. For the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. They understood what he meant, that he himself was the Lord of the Sabbath. They had already rejected him. They would not be convinced. And this is the kind of people that the book of Hebrews is referring to when it says, if when they have experienced the goodness of God, if when they have understood the message of God, they quite deliberately not only turn away but oppose it, they're beyond help. They cannot be renewed. For they have distanced themselves permanently from him. And this is what Jesus was making them an example of. It's no wonder they were infuriated by him, because they would not accept him. They would not repent. And when he was departed thence, he went into their synagogue. Notice it says he went into their synagogue. They could not get rid of him, and that's what infuriated them. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they asked him, the Pharisees asked Jesus, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days, that they might accuse him? Now the law does not address that question. Nowhere in the law of Moses is this question asked or answered. But they had so themselves defined what work is, that to heal someone was a forbidden task. It was forbidden work. But you notice, Jesus didn't do anything when he healed people. He just touched them or spoke to them. He didn't go through any ritual. He didn't go through any healing process or any therapy. And yet, it was work, according to their definition. And they asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days, that they might accuse him? And he said unto them, what man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep? If it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. Directly contradicting their teachings. But he also had in another place called them hypocrites. He knew that if one of their lambs had fallen into a ditch on the Sabbath day, they would have pulled him out. And so they were going to accuse him, but he turned it around. Then said he to the man, stretch forth thine hand. You see, Jesus didn't do the work. The man simply reached forth his hand, and he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. So far as the Pharisees were concerned, Jesus didn't do anything that could be classed as work. But since there was a result, work had to have been done. People are like that universally, aren't they? Then the Pharisees went out and held a council against him, how they might destroy him. This seems to be an ingrained characteristic of human nature. If you can't convince someone, malign him. If that doesn't do any good, destroy him. Haven't we seen that right here in our own country, both politically and religiously? If you can't convince them, destroy them. And that is the tack that the people took with Jesus.